Accession number 29168, reel 3.
Those boys were, some of them were brave as anything, you know. When you come to think what they used to do to try to help one another, and we still got that feeling today with amongst our crowd. Like I've had mates come in with me who said, "Well, I've never met people like them before." I said, "Well, they've been through something, haven't they?" Not, I mean, on guard, I told them when I came back after the war. But see, that firm moved up to Windermere, in the Lake District, Silk Brothers. And I said, "Oh, I bet you had a lovely time up in Windermere." I said, "It's out this world, out this world." Until some silly devil came in, he said, "Now tell them the truth." So I was going around with the mayor of Rochester, and the Schultz bosses, the old Peter Kemp, and old Peter used to say, I had some good times when I came back, man. But it was, you know, you had to make your own life. That's why I've never worried about anything since I've been back. Old Jack, I tell you, I've suffered the mind, but I don't, not many people know how much I still suffer now, but I don't know. When was that on the worst enemy, not what we went through? I mean, it's just a matter of fact now that we're talking to you. I'm alive to tell you, isn't I? If I was dead, I couldn't have told you in any case. You know what I mean? See, Jack was in a different position than me. He was on, I don't know, he went through well, I know that.
He did. He's told me his story. Going back to your story, Alf, so we're now in the middle of 43. You've been on building these aerodromes for 18 months. What happens then in
1943? Well, you've got to another island.
Sorry, one other question. Did you have any information about what was going on in the rest
of the world? Well, yes. We did. One chap had an old radio. He got off the Flying Fortress, one of our chaps. So we got up here. We knew how far the chaps were away from us. And we knew that they'd made an order that they were not going to keep any prisoners. They were going to kill the lot. That's what we heard.
But that was later in the war, wasn't it? That was later. No, it was. In 1943, they said?
Yeah, same now.
Hmm.
Yeah. Because when they bombed them in Iruka, they bombed me. Of course, they had these geisha girls there as well, you know.
I'm not with you, Alf, I've lost this.
When I was on the island of Heroku.
When was that? That was just
where we moved.
Well, you were moved from Ambon to...
No, we moved from Heroku to Ambon.
Oh, I see.
So, they bombed us once here, I mean, you go. Let's then chase them in, or chase them out. The bloody Yanks, they dropped some pencils down the Yanks did, in the camp.
Pencils?
Pencils, yeah. Well, you know, American, just like, I don't know. Well, you could see some of these Yanks up there, and they waved to you, you know. They were down that low. But they didn't stay long, because these Japs had planes everywhere. But when we were on the island of Heroku, after this blooming war thing, two of the lads went out one night and decided that they're going to see a crash tomorrow. One of these Jack bombers, light bombers. They went out and blew the tires, pumped the tires up as hard as they could go. When they got on this coral, the coral cut into pieces, didn't it? They smashed right into a bin and right a rock face there. And there's a chap from Poplar, he was chasing with me. He went and helped them out. And the chaps, they gave him everything. They got everything for about three or four months after. Three bananas, three cigarettes, three cigarettes.
Because he helped these people out of the plane.
And helped the chaps out.
What did the rest of you think of him?
Well, you couldn't say much. I suppose we were... most of us are natural people, you know. We wouldn't see anyone killed if you could help them. But those like Dutch and that.
So they blew up the tyres very hard.
Yeah, that hard.
So that means they couldn't brake, or?
Oh, you couldn't brake. Well, the tyres just blew, didn't they?
When they landed?
Huh?
When it landed or when it took off?
When it was taken off. You know, old Ted Morgan, I'll always remember him. Proper Cockney, rather than Poplar boy, you know. Poplar as well in the Cockney area.
And you mentioned the geisha girls. You said there were you said there were geisha girls on Hiruku Island.
On there. Well, they had been there as their playthings, didn't they? They used to take them on all these islands. They used to get, I don't know what they got out of them. Well, they never used to make a lot out of it.
They were, these were a lot of them were Korean. They were slave girls who were pushed into brothels and used by the Japanese.
Yeah.
They were taken. So in the middle of 1943, you get moved
to Ambon.
Oh, you go to Ambon. Sorry, you were on Hiruku and then you get moved to Ambon. I made a mistake there. What happened on Ambon? What were you doing there?
Oh, we were finishing off the aerodrome there, because that was dead easy. It was more or less sand than that. But when they bombed, when the Yanks bombed it, we had to go and set these bombs. You know, these bombs that didn't go off. We had to set that.
And these were live bombs that hadn't exploded?
Yeah. Of course, the Japs stood back and watched, didn't they?
Did any of them explode?
No, we were lucky there. But that was more or less a holiday camp, that than an Ambon. Well, you know, the natives there were real good. They were real good lads. They were, whatever they could do for you, they'd do.
Would they smuggle food into you?
Yeah, bananas especially. And although there weren't many bananas grown on Ambon, and pineapples. But I was out one day and I cut one of these pineapples off. Next thing I pulled something out of them and poured it. A dart. Because when you cut the water end off, the top you're supposed to push back into the ground. Then you go again, pineapples. You know that, drop it. And the other said, it's blooming midget pellets in this jungle. I don't out of there, really good blow gun anyway.
Well, they'd fired a dart at you.
No, they were
not a poisoned one.
No. But I was lucky that someone pulled him out. But it was the natives were more or less, well, they couldn't help you, if you know what I mean. They'd help you as much as they could, but their lives were at risk as well. And we always had to go in the jungle with these Japs, because they were scared of the natives bumping them off. They would have done. But I never went through any torture in any way, not like that.
Good.
Not as they call it torture. I mean, I've got much of a blooming Muslim rifle, but more than once. Then the rest on the back with them in wire ropes. And,
I suppose some of the guards were very brutal and some were not. I mean, there must have been some.
Well, not all of them were like that. There was one chap when we were on the island of, no, that's when we were on the Surabaya. We went back to Surabaya after these islands. And then from there we went in back to Singapore. And there was one Jap there one day, you know, he spoke perfect English. He had the chrysanthemum, which is their top medal from the First World War, fighting with the English. He loved the English people. He hated Yanks, but he loved the English people. And he's telling me about it. He said, we like English. She said, us old men. You know, because he was getting on then, you know, being in the First World War, he said, we marked Englishmen because when we fought with them, they were good, you know, Englishmen. But I don't know. There were some nice Japs as well as bad buggers. I mean, it's the same in every country, isn't it? You've got bad Englishmen just as well. Because we had one Englishman who used to sell all. He could lift up a 250-pound bomb, put on his shoulder. And then he expected everyone else to do it. Because he was a PTI instructor. You know, he's a big belt. Peter Harmon, I'll always remember that devil.
So how long were you on Ambon for, Alf?
Oh, about 12 months, I think.
So now we're in the middle of 1944.
Yeah, that's when I went back to Singapore.
We're moving quite quickly now. Are we missing out on things? Is there something we haven't talked about yet? If we're coming up to the middle of 1944, can you think of anything around there that we should have talked about that we haven't? You know, something important that sticks in your mind?
As halfway through 44, I got back on Singapore. I know we never had any rain on these Bremen Islands for over 18 months. And when I got in Ambon Harbour on the ship there, I dived off the side of the ship. I went down that power, I don't know, didn't think I'd ever stop. You know, you could get the Queen Mary in that dock. He's a massive doctor and a natural doctor. So he came up with, I don't know, the more do I die down there. And there was a fish out there, when you grabbed hold of them, they used to, like electric fields, didn't it? Yeah.
So in the middle of 1944, you go back to Singapore. Yeah. Is there a feeling now amongst you and your fellow prisoners that the Japanese are losing the war? Can you see the end of the war? Do you feel that there is some hope? Did you keep your spirits up?
Oh yes, we felt there was some hope, but it's like when they put on the play in Singapore, when the Japs were certain that some of our Japs dressed up as women, that we had women with us. Yeah, women. Well, you know, we always have, pretty near every Sunday, we used to have a little bit of a service amongst ourselves. And just before we left the island of Ambon, we went back from Ambon to Surabaya, but when we were in Surabaya, we were out on working parade, and the chap came out with us as a wing commander, Cable, I always remember him, and the chap told the fella to do something, or this Corrin did, and he wouldn't do it, and was then trying to push this fella in the trench, told us to bury him. I don't feel that. Anyway, same time there was Japanese army boss riding down the bottom, and there was a woman down there, you know, and one of the women walked up to speak to some bad chap, Dutch woman, and this really, what was his name up there, Korean, who started messing around with her. And this bloody Jap general, well, I suppose he was a general, he's right out. He came out and he shot him dead on the spot in front of us because he didn't like that. He wasn't having that. Not all Japs are bad, but I mean, there were some decent people like everyone else. But the only real bad one I ever met was Consul Mori. That's when I was on the island of Oruku. But he came right round in the end, you know, because he found out he couldn't get away with anything. There's one day on in the, oh, I forgot about that, it's gone. when someone went and took the, you know, steamroller, didn't you? The big roller on the front, there's a big knot at the top, isn't there? Well, they were going to put this on the sandpan, and of course the knot was missing, and it sunk the sandpan, didn't it? You know, smashed it right up. But I don't know who done that. That was on the island of Ruka just before we left. I don't know. You know, things that happen there, sometimes you forget things. You have to forget. Otherwise you'd be living like a fool, wouldn't you? Like a pretty chap up in when I went up to Asla. He said, "Are you stupid?" I said, "Yeah, I must be stupid to talk to a bloody wog like you." And this wog was a bloody Iranian, you know. That was up in the naval hospital. And he went and reported me to the captain. They called him, captain, he came around and said, "I know how you feel. Take no notice. It's gone." He said, "I gave him a gun again, Dick. Calling you a bloody fool, you know. But, these things have happened. And I suppose it's best to try to forget them, but you can't. Sometimes you lay in bed. More than once I've done, even now, I've threatened to try to escape out there, and there's always been something stopping me. And then you wake up shivering and shaking and... But I mean, I'm glad that I'm with that crowd in there because, if we'd all been separated, if there's nothing been formed in Plymouth, I'm afraid that a lot of them died quicker. Because I was one of the original ones from here. I came down from Rochester down here to live. That was in 1947. That's when they first started this, what's that, in Plymouth. People.
Can I go back to, so we're now in the middle of 1944 and you're back in Singapore. Why were you taken back to Singapore in 44?
Well, because I suppose there's everything going there, wasn't it? In case I don't know whether we were taking it back there just to bump us off or what.
And what did you do there?
Well, not a lot. We were in the camp most of the time. And then, well, we went out digging tunnels and that, or, you know, for them to go into. We dug one tunnel around Singapore and there was 10 of our chaps got killed. It all capsized on them. This is all sand.
So, but I mean, back in Singapore, you weren't working as slave labour anymore?
No,
you were just in
no,
the camp.
Not like that. No, not really.
Was the camp more organised in Singapore? You had, you said you had, you put on theatre plays and...
Oh.
I mean, life was easier.
I mean, some of the chaps had never left Singapore, you know. They were lucky there, but... I say lucky, I don't know where they were or not. No, we used to put on these plays and all that, and the Japanese used to come in, you know, like sometimes you see on TV where the warders in prison come in and join in with it. I mean, because one of their women songs, Auld Lang Syne, and that's one of their main songs. And we used to whistle Colonel Bogey as we came along, you know. And then I used to go spear with that. I don't know.
So we go through that sort of period, 1944, 1945. What happened? You were just in the camp.
I was in the camp, but we still went out various places, like Nisun Village, and went out towards Sembawang, and then Iritam, and then these places were, I don't know. You see, Singapore was quite modern in those days, you know. Because the Japs had the best of everything there, didn't they, when they got there. But, they couldn't treat us much worse than they did on the other place. But were never treated as bad as they are. Because there was too many Chinese here for them, I think. The Chinese were looked after us as much as they could. But now I'm afraid I'm give you a grim story, really, because I can only speak as I find, can't I?
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. No, you tell me it as you feel it. What happened then? I mean, if say we're coming now towards the end of the war in 1945. How were you released? What happened with that whole process?
Well, the only reason we knew that the war was over was the amount of Jap heads running down the street. The Chinese had cut their bloody heads off. Shovel or something, I think. Swipe their heads off. That's the only reason we knew it was finished.
But there were no guards in the camp?
Eh?
There were no guards
in the camp? No, they cleared off, didn't they? But, most of us went out, same night. A lot of us got a rollicking from a blooming Welsh international, Wilf Wooler. Never heard of him? He went and booked it. I read about 200 bloody people on charges. Along came Lord Louis Mountbatten. What are you going to do with this? You've got them on charge. What are you going to charge them for? Where are you going to put them? He said, you can cut all that bloody lot out. He said, I'm going to put you on charge. Trying to upset their own bloody mates. He was a devil, that captain, he was, in a, what's his name, Hakak, at the Hakak. And he worked in the, when he was a prisoner, what happened to him? He worked in a cookhouse, didn't he? So he was better than the most of people who served through the war. Wilf Wooler, yeah.
So just suddenly you see, you know, the war is over, the Japanese disappear.
They disappeared more or less.
There was no rejoicing. And then when did you see the first friendly British or American face then?
Oh, the first was a, what's his name, the Dunman, Dumpshire Regiment.
They came into the camp?
Well, they came into the camp, yeah, but I mean, there were some Yanks there as well, but the Dunpshire Regiment was the one that...
And they gave you food and they gave you clothing?
Well, whatever they could.
Were they shocked at what they saw?
Oh, yeah, well... When I was set free, what did I weigh? I weighed just over 6 stone, I think. Yeah, 100 pounds. The first meal I ate, they gave us singlets to wear, you know. They had to cut my singlet off because I couldn't get them off. I'd put on that much weight through one meal.
And what was it like for you, if you can remember all this time ago, what was it like suddenly to be free again after all this time?
You were just mad, weren't we? I still couldn't sleep in the bed. I never slept in the bed for about 2 years after, not even when I came back here. I sleep on the floor, you know, something's lovely there. But, yes, it was a marvellous feeling. But then we didn't like what we seen happen in Singapore docks with the Aussies. They were bashing these Japs around and making them do this and that. I mean, that's not an Englishman's way of freeing anyone. Not in those days it wasn't. And you respected everyone, no matter what nationality they were. But I don't know.
So what, the Australians were beating up Japanese prisoners of war?
Who were killed? Yeah, I mean, good luck to them. I mean, because we had a lot of Australian boys there. And we had there's one thing that always sticks in my mind. We're all in a camp in Singapore in East Island Village, and a crowd of the Aussies and New Zealanders took me in a circle. And they were on about Mount Everest. I can always remember it. It was only yesterday. And they said, Mount Everest will be conquered in, what was it, 1949? Something like that. By a New Zealander. You know. And they were going to bet on this. They'd bet on anything, those Aussies. They bet on living mosquitoes running along. But it happened, you know. It was a New Zealander, the first one. And I think it was about 1949 or 1950, I don't know.
1952.
Well, I think it was just after the war.
I think, it was the coronation of the Queen. Maybe it was 49, maybe you're right. I honestly don't know. It was the same year that the Queen was crowned. Our present Queen.
Yeah.
The coronation of the Queen was the same year.
Yeah, she was crowned after that, wasn't she? Yeah.
It was
52. 52,
was it?
52 or 53.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember. I was born in 52, so I seem to bring some memory. Anyway, so you're released. They feed you, they clothe you. What happens to you next after that?
Oh, yeah. I suppose it was there we had various medical personnel, and then we got shipped to Ceylon, to Colombo. Right. We were only over there for about 2 days. And then from there, we went to, what's the name of the place? Port Tufik, on the way back. Just here, pull up and ship the stuff. And we came right back to Southampton.
And by this time, had you regained a lot of your body weight? Was everybody...
Again, yeah, you blew it up, but it wasn't normal weight, was it? When you got back to normal weight, it was all right. But I was 13 stone at one time. I was as fat as I was tall. But I don't know.
So you come back to Britain then, and when do you get back, Alf? Can you remember the date you came back?
No, I can't. And I was in the autumn anyway.
So the autumn of
when did the war finish? 15th of... What's the name? 15th of next month. September. August.
God, you've got me...
17th of August.
Vijay Day.
Vijay Day.
Yeah, that's right. It was in August, September. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, so you were back.
We got back... About a month after that.